Hello, I'm Liz Shannon Miller, and thank you for listening to the first ever installment of Liz Tells Frank Live. Liz Tells Frank What Happened In began as message board postings where I'd literally explain to my friend Frank Smith what happened in various films and TV shows. In the years since, it has grown into a media empire, which is what you say when a blog has generated a few books and now also this humble audio-video experiment. Liz Tells Frank What Happened In Dark Angel, featuring Frank Smith and a wonderful live studio audience, was recorded on September 24, 2014 at the offices of Psychic Bunny. Be aware that the following contains adult language and themes. Please enjoy Laurel Vale's wonderful introduction for the evening, and then prepare to discover the mysteries and majesties of James Cameron's Dark Angel.
Alright, this is how we gonna do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. Many years ago, while hiking in the Ozarks, the world-renowned behavioral psychologist, ursinologist, / TV critic, Liz Miller came across a bear. But don't worry, it was dead. The hunter claimed self-defense. Now, being an ursinologist, Liz suspected she'd find cubs nearby. Lo and behold, up in a nearby tree were two little cubs and a full-grown man, naked, with long matted hair and a big bushy beard. Despite the fact that this made no sense, Liz made it her mission to civilize this man. She named him Frank. Frank was an excellent student, quickly mastering language, using indoor plumbing, driving a car, etc. Liz could have stopped there and considered it a success. But there was something missing. Though Frank was quite adept at climbing trees and catching salmon with his bare hands, rawr. He was, as it were, just a babe in the woods when it came to pop culture. The problem was that moving pictures frightened and confused him. And so, Liz began telling Frank what happened instead. It was a resounding success. So she has invited us here today to witness one of these tellings. It being the anniversary of when she first found him. Now, Frank is very eloquent in his speech, but don't be fooled. There is still a little of that raised by bears thing in him. So there are a couple things to be aware of. Try not to make eye contact with Frank for an extended period of time. He may consider it an act of aggression. Please silence all electronic devices as Frank considers certain ringtones to be an act of aggression. Now, during the session, you may feel inclined to comment or ask a question. This is okay. So long as you ring this bell first. During these tellings, Frank gets so focused on the sound of Liz's voice that interruptions are often treated as an act of aggression. Liz devised a way to break his concentration before someone else speaks. So please, for your own safety and ours, use the bell before interjecting. And now, without further ado, please welcome Liz and Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Hi, Liz.
How's it going?
Oh, just great.
Great. So, okay, I've got the show to tell you about.
Great.
It's called Dark Angel.
Dark Angel.
Yes. You might recognize it from the PowerPoint that's right behind you. And I feel like the best way to kind of illustrate what we're dealing with here is, Frank, there's a video I'm going to show. The quality is terrible, largely because God Almighty, no, who would keep this on YouTube? But somebody has uploaded in like the lowest possible resolution.
From a more primitive time.
Yes, yes. Yeah. The 1 minute trailer that Fox used to sell the show Dark Angel to the world. And I'm going to share it with you now.
Anonymous report about a covert genetics lab using DNA to produce a superior human.
What does any of this have to do with me?
The barcode on your neck, Max. I know who you are. I know who you're running from.
Yeah, that's just all you think it is, guys.
You are a Terminator.
Go take us.
I haven't been able to get you off my mind.
You need to get out, Mark.
The get a bad attitude.
Come on, you're not even trying.
That's about all we need. Guys, yeah. So, Frank, so that was the trailer for Dark Angel. And as you know, it's James Cameron's fault. James Cameron has the lowest possible credit you could put on this thing. It's like he's like a co-creator with another writer named Charles Agee, but it's from James Cameron, and that was a really big deal back in the year 2000. I think it's officially his first series role. Also, the reason we're doing this at all about Dark Angel is because I was doing a thing for work where I had to write something about directors who should never make TV shows, and somebody mentioned James Cameron, I was like, but wait, I can prove it. That said, I loved this show. But first, there's a very important point to make here right now, which is that Dark Angel is not to be confused with True Calling.
This has already happened twice this evening.
Not only has it happened twice this evening, in three separate occasions leading up to this evening, I would bring up Dark Angel and people would be the one with Eliza Dushku and Zach Galifianakis, right? Now, to be fair to those people, it is actually really easy to see how they got confused. They both ran for two seasons on Fox, 2000 to 2002 in Dark Angel's case, 2003 to 2005 in True Calling's case. They both feature brunette actresses. They both were shot in Vancouver. And that, by the way, is the most important thing. Frank, let's talk about Canadian science fiction. Frank, this is like the most important thing in the world to me. It is a sick addiction that began in the 90s, and it's just it is of course largely due to the X-Files, but there's so many terrible shows from that era, and today I still watch. And like I said, it's my very favorite. I went extra special with the effects on that one. And one of the things I really love about Canadian science fiction television, is especially this stuff shot in Vancouver, is that it's all very insular. It's a very small town. It's a very small community. Everyone uses the same actors. Everyone uses the same locations. Everything's doubled up all over the place. And so, you know, the same actor who appears on this thing or that thing. Yeah, it's amazing. So we're going to talk about some Dark Angel actors who appeared on Battlestar Galactica. Let's see. Okay. First up, we've got Tomoa Pennicott. Love him. He's a much bigger part of Battlestar Galactica, clearly. Makes it through the first season, ends up becoming a linchpin. I forget who he plays on Dark Angel. Some minor role, though.
But with a great torso.
Yes. Callum Keith, of course. And Callum Keith Rennie, of course, by Canadian law, is in this show. Callum Keith Rennie, of course, has been in every Canadian science fiction television show ever.
He's the way I knew the second X-Files movie was shot back in Canada.
Yes. I think we've had this conversation about how we're not totally sure Callum Keith Rennie's allowed to cross the border into America.
I know.
But he's such a talented actor that they find ways to fit him in. So let's see. Nana Visitor.
Oh, my God.
She minor presence on Battlestar. She only does, one episode. But of course, we love her from Deep Space Nine. And she plays basically the major villain of Dark Angel's first season. She kind of takes over. She's got this really cute blonde crew cut. It's wonderful. Candace McClure plays a blind lady for a couple of episodes in Dark Angel. She's, of course, a girl. And God, this makes me really sad, but first thing I think of is, girl who shoots it to herself in the head in Battlestar Galactica. Spoiler alert for Battlestar Galactica. Sorry about that. Race Park, minor role. This played a Cylon on Battlestar, plays a police detective in a couple of episodes of Dark Angel. Brian Markison, he was on a Mad Men recently. Nikki Klein, she plays a genetic experiment. This person. I don't even know who that guy is. Let's see. Okay. Sorry. I'm almost. I think.
Some of these are like Star Wars.
74 actors from Dark Angel also made some appearance or another on Battlestar. It is 74 times this happened. I did not believe it. I went into, like, I felt, because there's a Wikipedia, a Dark Angel Wikipedia that listed them all out, and then I copied and pasted that into, like, a numbered list to be double sure. I used science for this. Right?
It's a credit to your journalism.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. So 74 times that happened. So, the first season of Dark Angel.
Okay.
Let's see. So, this is Jessica Alba. She is technically an actress.
A union has determined it.
I'm pretty sure she's SAG. Jessica Alba, to her credit, I will say this about Jessica Alba, she really improves over the course of the first two seasons. And it's really also important to remember, she is super young in this show. She's like 19 years old. And I know this because Jessica and Alba and I have the same birthday. Exact same birthday, same year, which is always really daunting every time I see Jessica Alba news. And I'm like, oh, she's done a lot with her life. I haven't been in any Fantastic Four movies. It's really disappointing. But anyways, Jessica Alba, you know, doing the thing that she has to do, and it's her first big role, and, you know, I think she does, like, kind of relax, I think, by the end of season two. It only takes 42 episodes, but she really comes into her own. So, this is Michael Weatherly. He is dreamy. He is, in fact, my platonic ideal of a nerd crush.
He's like late 90s exploitation. He looks like the guy who sings Closing Time.
That is totally fair. I should explain to you these things they're playing, by the way. So Jessica Alba's character is a character. She plays a character named Max. She, who is a genetically enhanced super soldier. And as a genetically enhanced super soldier, she was as a kid, she was that. And then she escaped with a bunch of her fellow super soldiers out to the outside world, where she's been living in hiding from a secret government organization. There we go. Jeff.
Do you feel that they really missed the boat by not naming her Angel?
It would explain why the show is called Dark Angel. Spoiler alert, Frank. It is never clear why the show is called Dark Angel. There's some implication that she is an angel who is dark, but it's never sounded off in the dialogue or anything. It's never explicitly clear. It's just like, hey, this show's called Dark Angel. She's got a barcode on the back of her neck. It's a thing. So she's basically kind of living in hiding, hiding from the secret government organization that initially created her, working as a bike messenger. Michael Weatherly plays a super hunk, first off, but he's the he's like basically a freedom fighter in the 2020s, using cable hacks. We'll get into this. Okay, it's all very sensible and clear. The most important thing is this: we got a will they want they. We got a will they want they, guys. It is really fucking dumb. So, the classic will they or won't they relationship, as you know, is, you know, the tension over whether or not they're going to do it. And unfortunately, the rationale with the first season of Dark Angel is we don't see each other like that. They see each other like that all the time. They kiss in like episode 9. But then after that, it's like, oh no, we don't see each other like that. It's very, very dumb. It's really frustrating. And the best part is it only gets dumber. So, Why It Sucks to Be Max, season 1. Society sucks because an EMP blast, I guess like in the year 2012 or something, this first season takes place in the year 2019. And in a couple years beforehand, an EMP blast has destroyed all technology and all that, and everyone kind of lives. It's kind of post-apocalyptic, but not quite, because there is technology still around. It's very weird. But everyone, think worse than today. Apparently, they refer to it as a depression. Max is being hunted by, as I mentioned, a evil government super soldier agency, which makes life hard, I guess. Dreamy Glasses guy is in a wheelchair. First episode, in the pilot, he gets shot in the back and doing something heroic, and then is in a wheelchair for a while. They stick to it for a good solid 15, 16 episodes, right? and we'll get to why in a bit. Oh, yeah, we're not like that. Because for stupid, like, they just... Apparently they have emotional issues. I don't know. It's really badly written. To make a living, she works as a bike messenger, which seems like a really... It doesn't seem like an easy way to make your living, I'm just saying. Like, and also, she, you know, people are jerks and all that, and she technically is a squatter in her apartment. And in the midway through the first season, she actually switches roommates. She has, like, this whole other separate roommate. And then halfway through, this girl enters... This girl's already been her coworker, and they're just kind of clearly the writers are like, well, you know, best friend characters for this girl. We really just need the one. And original Cindy is really confusing. I kind of love her name, even though she does use it to describe herself in the third person all the fucking time. She says things like, original Cindy, don't play that. I wish I was exaggerating. I wish I was. But no, she says things like original, you don't touch the hip of original Cindy. Because also, original Cindy is gay, but she is gay in this very weirdly, it's like, it should technically be, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Yes.
Is it weird that I'm getting a sci-fi Rent vibe?
It is not sci-fi Rent. Perfect descriptor of this. A perfect descriptor. Somebody needs to be dying of AIDS at some point. I'm sure it would have happened. Yeah. this metaphor might be better than you think. But Rachel Cindy, like, it's really weird because the show is like has this. It's technically really progressive for being a show in this in the year 2000 and having a lesbian series regular character. Except that she just kind of, like, it's really weird. Like, she's, for one thing, she's incredibly transphobic. Like, there's a episode that features a trans woman, and, like, the trans woman is originally dating this, like, their nerdy boss, and everyone's like, ah, poor Normal, he's dating that trans lady. Then the trans lady is like, I'm gay. And then she's into original Cindy, but it's like, original Cindy, don't play that. Original and she spends a lot of time lusting after straight women, and there's one episode where she does have like an ex-girlfriend and she actually does kiss her girlfriend on the lips. Takes another year and a half. But you know, we have original Cindy being all original Cindy-ish. So Frank, remember that the show was made in the year 2000.
Yes.
So here is the technology. And even remember in a vaguely post-technology society. But that still has technology. Here's the technology that exists in the year 2019, according to these people. We got cloning and genetic manipulation. Got barcodes! Because she's got a barcode tattoo on the back of her neck. It's like some magic tattoo where she can try to remove it, but it will come back. It's like genetically in her code. It's like Orphan Black, but not actually smart. And then we've got exoskeletons. This is something. Remember when I mentioned that Michael Weatherly gets out of the chair at some point? He gets out of the chair because of an exoskeleton. And what's really delightful about the exoskeleton, which is clearly like we're tired of having to write all these scenes with the character in a wheelchair, so we'll write an entire episode where Rainn Wilson is like a superhero with an exoskeleton, and then he gives it to Michael Weatherly at the end of the season. Yeah, it's like old military hardware. Of all the things about Dark Angel that don't make sense, that actually, yeah, that episode held together pretty well. And so he leaves it to Michael Weatherly, and Michael Weatherly manages to get it working for him. And the big thing about it is that they just kind of use it. He just is using the exoskeleton the whole time from that point in season one to the end of season two. And all it means for this character who is crippled from the waist down, folks, is that every time he walks, the sound editor has to add a little whirring whoosh noise. So he sounds like an at-at walking across the room. But that's how they get around him being in a wheelchair. Bikes. We have bikes and motorcycles. There are motorcycles too, but mostly there's a lot of biking because that's the future. We do have some cell phones in the year 2019. We do have some cell phones. We also have cable TV and cable TV hacks. So Michael Weatherly's primary form of activism is he does this thing called Eyes Only, which is a cable hack. And he hacks into the cable feed and delivers like a minute-long message of the truth, which I guess the establishment won't let him say. He has a lot of money. He's like part of like the remaining 1% of the society. So until like midway through the season, until he surrenders it for whatever reason. But anyways, that's how he gets his message across. He hacks into the cable TV. We do have the internet to some extent. Like, we're able to do web searches. They understand that concept because Yahoo was around then, I guess, and all that. A lot of candles on this show. This is the epitome of, are there two characters in an apartment together? Well, there are, like, going to be fucking 20 dozen candles. It kind of makes sense in the, you know, post-apocalyptic. Yes.
Is that why they called it Dark Angel?
It really should have been. That's probably in the story Bible. Because she uses so many candles. I love it. And most importantly, Frank, this is the most important piece of technology. This is the technology that keeps everything working together in Dark Angel, keeps our characters connected, keeps them in the clear. Pagers! My favorite bit, and we're going to get to this. We're going to talk a little bit more about this. There's an episode where Max has to is on a timer. So she uses the timer on her pager. So she's constantly checking her pager to see what time it is. But it is like classic, like pager. Like she gets the page, and then she has to go find the phone, and then she calls him back. And it's not like a security thing. It's just like they understood the concept of cell phones, they understood the concept of regular phones, and they understood the concept of pagers, and it's just like a beautiful time capsule of that period of time when those all three things live together in a place that makes no sense. So does season one end on a totally mean cliffhanger? The answer is, you bet, and it's this lady's fault. It's Nana Visitor for those who are in the back, and she is the evil head of the secret government organization that made Max and is trying to get her back for whatever reason. But you guys, I can't stay mad at her. She kept showing up being evil and shooting people that didn't even need to be shot. She's like, I don't shoot you. That would solve that problem. And she's like, no, but yeah, Visitor, you were Kira, PS9. I love you. The cliffhanger is Max gets recaptured by the evil government organization. Michael Weatherly thinks she's dead. It's very sad. How sad is it? Look how flat his hair is. This was teased to me when I was posting about this on Facebook. My friend Jill teased that this would happen. She said, he's going to be so sad when he thinks she's dead. His hair will be so flat. And then she remarked that it's not, the question is it just, like, it just can't get up to where it used to be for whatever reason, or is it because he just doesn't have the will to put in product? I don't know. But that is some fucking sad hair. He's got a little sad beard. So, now we're in season two, Frank, and man, it as much as it sucked to be Max last season, she still had some fun. She still hung out with the girls and went to clubs and said, oh, no, we're not like that about Michael Weatherly. She didn't make out with him. They do make out, like, properly. They're celebrating their anniversary, and he kisses her on the cheek, and then they end up kissing, and then some guy walks in cock-blocking again. This show is so full of cock-blocking. It's ridiculous. But they kiss in the second to last episode, and then the last episode they're all caught up in this military crap, or the secret government organization crap. And so they don't really get a chance to do anything. There's actually an elaborate dream sequence at the very end of the season finale where Max is like, you know, like imagining everyone partying together and having a great time now that they've stopped the evil government organization. And then she and Michael Weatherly go and they make vaguely awkward candlelit love. And then she...
Do we have any montages in the first season to go along with this? It feels like...
It's not super montage-y, largely because it is 21 episodes, so there's no need to compress anything. They can just constantly ramble, and oh my god.
Are there there more candles lit during lovemaking?
It is actually a little excessive. It is there are noticeably way more candles lit this time. Man, look how sad he is. And guys, it's only going to get sadder. Why it sucks to be Max season two. So, she's trapped in the first episode, she's trapped in the secret military government whatever thing again. And she has to escape. That's a problem. But she does escape in the first episode. She runs immediately to Michael Weatherly. He immediately is thrilled to see her. They immediately start kissing. And then he collapses to the ground because of a virus. Max.
This is very Rent.
Oh!
The candle.
Wait, we'll be getting to this. While she was in... These words are going to come out of my mouth. They're going to sound so stupid, and I apologize, but it's not my fault. It's the writers of Dark Angel who did this. When Max was in the secret government organization, somehow knew who Michael Weatherly was, somehow had a sample of his DNA. So, while she was under their control, she was infected with a virus that is genetically keyed to him and him alone, and... Sorry, it's just... If she touches him, she will kill him.
I worked a lot for the military, and that's not so
great. I can go cash for that way. Yeah.
So...
It's
cuties. So, she can touch anyone else. Anyone else she wants to in the world. But she cannot touch him or she will kill him. And they do accidentally touch a couple of times this season, and they're able to cure it with blood from her or other transgenics. We'll get into fully what transgenics are in a bit, Frank. But we have Jensen Ackles on the show now. Jensen Ackles, I bet this audience is 50% comprised people who have watched a lot of Supernatural and people who have no idea what Supernatural is. I am actually not one of the people who watched ever. I've technically seen the first episode of Supernatural, the first. I want to give it a real shot. And one of the reasons why now I want to give it a real shot, we got some head shakes. Let's have a poll. Like, who here is a Supernatural fan?
I've seen it.
We've got four hands and have seen it. But anyways, the thing about Jensen Ackles, I think, that's really interesting is I think there are actors in this world where it's like you don't understand why they've been on television for like 12 years and then you find and then you see the right thing, you figure out, like, oh, yeah, yeah. Like Jensen Ackles, I've seen other people, it's happened to other people, and it finally happened to me. Jensen Ackles plays this bad boy member of the secret, same secret program that Max was in. Like, they initially meet because he gets put in her cell because they're supposed to become breeding partners. it's amazing. But he's really charming, actually. He's a really charming actor. He does a lot with the material he's given. And he's kind of, like, fun. He's, the character itself is, like, he's not very serious. He's just like, I just want to have sex and watch TV and drink beer, and I really don't care about the fact that I'm a government super soldier. I'm really just in it for myself. It's really delightful. Jensen Ackles is actually, you know, but Jensen Ackles makes life complicated for Max because he keeps getting in trouble. She keeps bailing him out of trouble. Notably, there's this one episode where, like, Max is maybe going, has maybe tracked down enough money and also a scientist who can cure the virus because, again, that fucking virus. And Jensen Ackles, like, is about to die for some other reason. So she's like, okay, fine. Instead of curing the virus so I can fuck this guy, I will cure you. And then you will not die. But I'm out all this money and I still can't have sex with Michael Weatherly. It really sucks. Genetic mutant experiments also key. This is like kind of a subset of the Jensen Ackles thing. Basically, in the secret government compound that Max escaped from, there were a bunch of, like, let's say, earlier prototypes of the same genetic experiments that created her. And as a result, so it's basically like a lot of weird genetic mutants, and they've all been set, she's basically helped set them free, but that's not necessarily a good thing. They keep, you know, roaming around Seattle, screwing up stuff, and then she has to go take care of it. There's one major character who is a big source of that, but is also not a terrible person. He's like a nice guy, just happens to look like how he looks. these things happen in the world of Dark Angel. Okay, we also have an ancient blood cult.
Like every cyberpunk story.
It is. So I have to... Okay, here's the thing. I don't properly have information about the ancient blood cult in this PowerPoint presentation because I kind of forgot it happened because it kind of drove me insane. Because it's just like all of a sudden, basically, what happens is, like, at the beginning of the season, there's this new guy who's... This guy's apparently an agent of the secret government organization. In actuality, he is a member of a ancient blood cult that is trying to track Max down because her blood holds a secret to something or other. I don't know. This show got canceled before they resolved it. Allegedly, actually, the plan was for the ancient blood cult to make sense in the context of Dark Angel.
What's the difference between a blood cult and a cult, a normal cult?
This blood cult, they're very invested in bloodlines, and so like that's the big thing, is that they need Max's blood. I think the deal was like there's going to be an apocalypse, and without the blood, I don't know. There's an ancient blood cult. There's a lot of stuff with snakes. I don't understand what happened. I actively blocked it out, and then I was rewatching stuff right before putting this together, and I was like, oh shit, I didn't mention the blood cult at all. But the blood cult's totally a thing. So did I mention that virus, Frank? That virus really bothers me. Because it's just like this, it's just like, that fucking virus. For fuck's sake, that fucking virus. It's just like, because the thing is that instead of trying to solve the problem, like they make a couple of half-hearted efforts to try to solve the problem, but no one's ever like, you know, I read this X-Men comic once, Rogue seemed to have some success with gloves. But it is literally the only thing keeping them apart at a certain point. They literally would be boning like crazy, except that they can't do it because the virus will kill him. Seriously, that fucking virus! And I have this slide earmarked for me telling you about easily my... Yes?
Do you feel that Pushing Daisies ripped off Dark Angel? This key premise, will they or won't they, can't touch each other, lest one of them will die?
Yes, except for the thing is that Pushing Daisies watched Dark Angel, was like, well, they can try gloves or ceramics. There is a one shot in Dark Angel. It's a longing touch. They touch hands between like a pane of glass. It's so beautiful. But I bookmarked this slide to tell you about this one really special episode. And remember, I mentioned the pager before, and there was a countdown. So Max tracks down yet another scientist in an effort to cure the virus. She is, to her credit, she does seem at this point genuinely interested in solving the problem. Not interested enough to solve the problem through conventional means that you and I would understand, but she does seem interested in fixing it. And so she tracks down a scientist. She's like, "Yeah, I can cure you. I'll give it a shot." So she gives him the money. She gives him the money. He goes off and does the science things. And here's the thing of it: the guy does cure her. But it only lasts for 12 hours. He's like, I can only give you this window for 12 hours. Your blood is breaking down the thingamabobber I put in it to cure the virus. You've got 12 hours. And she's like, well, okay. She does what is a rational thing to do, which is she goes and tells Michael Weatherly, look, we've got 10 hours and 50 minutes to bone. I guess there was some traffic. And instead of doing what they should do, which is immediately start fucking, like immediately, like pants on the ground, let's get this done. They're like, oh no, it has to be special. This is like the only time. So there's some slow dancing, they open some wine, they'll tell funny stories, very cute, very sweet. And then...
My assessment of this episode really depends on whether it aired before or after September 11th.
Frank, I'm fear. Frank, I am fairly confident it aired after.
Unacceptable.
We as a nation needed to heal.
Yes.
And their fucking would have healed us.
Yeah. There's no time to waste.
That's right. That's true. We all were very aware of our mortality then. They weren't. They were dumb. But of course, then what happens is, so they stall for like 2 or 3 hours. And then, of course, one of these genetic mutants comes in and is like, guys, this other genetic mutant's tearing up Seattle. And Max is like, can it wait 8 hours? Because we haven't gone to the fucking yet. And he's like, well, not really. And she's like, fine. This episode literally ends with Max and, oh, his name's Logan. I'm using character names again. Max and Logan and Jensen Ackles in a car covered in, like, essentially, like, the stuff that a spider uses to, like, make hobbits into, like, cocoons. Like, that kind of, it's, like, this weird, gross webbing stuff. And that's literally, like, how, that's, like, the dramatic climax of the episode is that they've been cocooned and are about to be consumed by this genetic monster. Yes?
Could they be fucking in that cocoon?
The cocoon is in a car, and they're sitting in the driver and passenger side seats. So they're separated by the gear shaft and also, you know, the cocoon. Yes.
Does the exoskeleton have anything that will help them fuck in the cocoon?
No. The exoskeleton, remember, is...
Did you mean drive shaft?
We all feel very interested about that. Yeah, so that fucking virus, Frank. Spoiler alert for
this
the end
virus.
Of the season. They don't fix it at the end of the season. But we'll get to that. Quick, we kind of had this conversation about Jensen Ackles already, but look at Jensen Ackles. He's a good looking man. And brings a lot more charisma and verve to the project than it really deserves, frankly. You know, he did this, and then he went on the Supernatural, drops and shoots in Vancouver, and I'm sure he has a very nice house in Vancouver. A wife, kids. Jensen Ackles is doing great for himself. Way to go, Jensen Ackles. So now we need to talk about the other genetic freaks, who are literally at times referred to as trannies. I'm not kidding, because they're transgenics. This is basically a blanket term for any mutant-like creature. This includes Max, actually. Max and her fellow super soldiers are also, but they pass as normal, so yeah, there's stuff like that. There's a lot of X-Men filtering in here. It's now time for the world's hottest new game show.
Who's Ron Perlman?
There we go, and you guys are ready. Okay, we're going to do this by a show of hand. Well, let's see. What's the best way to do this? I'm going to show you two actors, two different TV shows. You are going to tell me who is Ron Perlman by shouting left or right. Ready? Go.
Right.
All right, you guys got it correct. Yeah. But you all see why I made that slide, yes, and why it maybe took me 15 minutes, and why that 15 minutes was the best use of 15 minutes I've had in a long, long time. So, yeah, yes.
Do we think Avatar sprung from that single frame?
Nope.
And if so, does that make the entirety of the series worth it?
That is a really good question. The major problem, I mean, because, yeah, not Ron Perlman is the character, because even something as generic as Ron Perlman's character on the for those who don't know, Ron Perlman on the right here, was in the first big TV role was on the 1980 series CBS's Beauty and the Beast. Fun fact about Beauty and the Beast. Ron Perlman was not allowed to have sex with Linda Hamilton on
because,
the 1980.
Because James Cameron wouldn't allow it?
No.
George Martin wouldn't allow it.
No, it was because CBS considered it bestiality.
Literally.
Don't worry. Don't worry, things have evolved though. And
yeah, now they have 2.5 men. That was mean to CBS.
Yes.
If she had at the same time had sex with Edward Woodward, would it have been equality? Oh.
Potentially. I just want to point out, The major thing I want to bring up with the character, this character whose name I'm actually blanking on, the only reason I want to bring him up is this show did in fact bring in one of my favorite tropes, or one of my favorite stupid tropes, which is the blind lady falling in love with the beast man thing, which does happen. That's actually what Candace McClure does. Yes.
I feel like the beasts always have amazing voices.
Actually,
he
does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does she kill herself after she realizes what she's been sleeping with?
No, she actually gets killed by the evil secret agent guy to cause problems for some reason. I don't know. I think he was just like, I'm going to show you who's boss, and so he kills her, and that sends. Oh gosh, Joshua. That's his name, Joshua. Everyone. That sends Joshua into a rage.
Much like the one Ron Perlman went into in Beauty and the Beast season 3.
All the time.
Yeah.
Okay, those are things. I confess I've actually not seen enough Beauty and the Beast season 3. I know.
Great
sequel. But this is a good thing. This is good information to have. Thank you. Season 2, in answer to the question on the slide, does end on a totally mean cliffhanger. This totally mean cliffhanger is basically, it's not super mean, except, so basically Max and the other transgenics end up at war with normal human society, like you do, and end up creating their own freak nation. That's what the episode is actually called. It's called Freak Nation. And they kind of form their own little separate society in this area of town no one wants to live in. And presumably then that would have led to a season 3 of them establishing their own society, much like the hit show Utopia. So, you know, that works out great. And then that blood cult thing would make sense. Season 3 had a lot of things it could deal with. Most importantly, that fucking virus. There's a lot of story left to tell in Dark Angel before it was tragically canceled to, I presumably, make way for True Calling. So, the one really important thing, though, Frank, is that this virus has been around for 21 episodes, and they finally figure out gloves. They found, yes.
Why are they both wearing gloves?
It's cold in Seattle. Okay. Also, when you are with a partner who is infected, it is important to be doubly careful.
That is the worst thing you can do. Two, they rub against each other, they break.
Wow, we're learning a lot of stuff here. So, it's now time, everyone, for Frank's final thoughts. Frank, what do you think of Dark Angel here?
I'm still not entirely clear on what the premise is.
She doesn't see.
Does she have powers?
She has super soldier powers.
What's the government doing?
Creating super soldiers.
It's good. This was an important feminist moment.
She does, in fact, say the line in the pilot, "Girls kick ass." I saw it on a T-shirt. It is delivered with about that much enthusiasm.
So, probably the crucial missing link between the Spice Girls and Lena Dunham.
Yes. That's basically that's essentially the timeline we're looking at here.
More than once over the time you've been talking, I've thought about the original slide of Jessica Alba and how she got those pants on. I think they were sewn on to her once she was already standing up.
She is very, yes, it is a private family moment. Actually, you know, I will say that this one nice thing about Dark Angel, like, wardrobe is taken pretty seriously. She wears a lot of things that you would imagine a bike messenger wearing, like bike shorts. And the kind of gloves, I guess, a bike messenger uses to keep from feeling chafed.
So she already had the gloves.
I am reminded that as a person who watched the show in a dorm room full of 19-year-old boys, that wardrobe sold us on the show.
Oh, 19-year-old boys. So many gifts you've given us.
They were fingerless gloves, that's why they didn't.
That's right. But also, she does have regular gloves. Because it's Seattle. It's cool.
True. Does she mostly wear dark tones?
Yes.
Is that why it's called
dark tones? Now, the greatest
mystery of Dark Angel may, in fact, end up being why is it called Dark Angel? Because the thing is, the show's premise, in answer to your, I guess, question, what the show's premise is, the show's premise is, but it's a lot of, like, it's very much, in some ways, it's almost like a slice of life type thing. It's like, what's it like to be a girl living in the big city, being hunted by the government, but also trying to make a living as a bike messenger and helping out the guy who's trying to change, stop evil conspiracies and whatnot from happening.
Well, now I'm gonna make it sound good.
Yeah. Now it sounds like a show HBO would buy.
Do I have to bring up the virus again? I'll bring up the virus again, Frank.
I guess I just have one final question, which is, I'm not clear who Zach Galifianakis is on this show.
I showed you the Beast Man already. That's a mean thing to say about Zach Galifianakis. Will I take it back?
Time will tell. Liz, I want to thank you for sharing Dark
Angel with me. Of course. It's been a genuine pleasure. Yes, we have.
Liz, how can you have gone through the whole thing and not mention that they were boning in real life?
Wow!
That is. Okay. Here, that is a good question, and I will explain. That was actually kind of a big deal to me at the time, because remember how I just mentioned that Michael Weatherly in this show is my platonic ideal of a perfect man, or just yes. Platonic ideal of a perfect man. I just want to emphasize that. I actually took a great deal of comfort in knowing a girl exactly my age. she got to wear the pants that you get sewn into, and it was good enough. I would not have at the time.
They probably had their first kiss on your birthday.
They probably
did.
Yes. My birthday.
Yeah.
Not hers.
Exactly.
The thing about it, though, is that in doing research for this presentation, I went and scanned over Jessica Alba's Wikipedia page for a couple minutes, there was a lot of stuff about how her upbringing was really conservative, and when she was in the relationship with Michael Weatherly, he was 12 years older than her, and her family did not approve, and they were very uncomfortable about the fact that this 19-year-old girl was dating Michael Weatherly, and she apparently was not comfortable with trying to be turned into a sex kitten. And so I actually, you are completely correct to call me out on that I did not mention that they were fucking in real life. But it's because I have new and conflicting feelings about it that I'm still processing. But I'm glad I got to... By telling you guys about it now, I feel like I've kind of come to terms with it. So...
Would you allow your own late teenage sons or daughters to go to Canada? Or do you feel that the experience would be inherently corrupting?
My primary response revolves about whether or not Callum Keith Rennie is still alive in Canadian television. I find that dude weird and creepy. I don't know what it is. I know some people really like him, but he's weird and creepy. That episode where he locks Kara up in season 2 of Battlestar Galactica, no, that is wrong and weird. And she is right to keep killing him over and over again, and I do not like Callum Keith Rennie.
He seems like a very talented man who looks like a bleached albino weasel.
Yes. Yes. I do not like him, do not trust him. So that is my answer. Otherwise, yeah, sure, why not? College is expensive.
Yeah.
So with that, friends, it's totally the end. Thank you very much. Thank you, as always, Frank. Thank you to Laurel for the wonderful introduction. And a very special thanks to the Men of Psychic Bunny, and Doug, Rick, and Asa, especially Rick, who helped actually set things up. Thank you very much, and I hope you've enjoyed Liz Tells Frank Live.
Thus concludes Liz Tells Frank Live. For more information about Liz Tells Frank, please visit LizTellsFrank.com, follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and all the other places one might follow things. And once again, thank you, Internet friend or stranger, for listening.